Welcome to The Art of Semi-Fiction. I am Robin Miller.
And I'm Jane Daly.
And we're going to kind of continue our conversation today about memoir. If you remember our first conversation a couple episodes ago, we were talking about it, and somehow almost all the examples we seem to have come up with were of rather dark,
very sad topics.
And the truth is, a lot of what is written is triggered by traumatic events. So it wasn't that we just are very dark people who just happen to choose those things to write about and read. The reality is, you see a lot of memoir on very hard topics, and those hard topics usually aren't, you know, how I learned to tie my shoes. They tend to be a little bit more about a really catastrophic mm-hmm. event and how they survived it, what they learned from it, how they navigated it. So, but we wanted to come back because that point painted a slightly darker picture.
We kind of did.
A little bit.
I think I even shed a tear.
Maybe. And I'm wondering if, you know, our children were watching that thinking, what do these people read? Do they, you know, sad, scary lives if all you're writing about is the loss and abuse and whatever else? Because the reality is, memoir isn't an inherently dark picture. You know, creative nonfiction, personal narrative, narrative nonfiction, all the terms we've been talking about, that's not just a topic meant for ugliness and
hard things.
That is
correct, yes. So. I mentioned I'm working on a book. It's called Why Are My Eyebrows Growing Out of My Chin? It is a humorous look
at
aging for women 55 to 75.
And that's not going to be just a how to do it book. That's
how to grow older with grace. No, it's funny. It's going to be funny.
I've just the table of contents kind of made me need to pens or something. I don't know.
So there are
absolutely
happy ways to write about narrative nonfiction.
And there's also there's also just what would have been back in the day a how-to book,
mm-hmm.
which, again, kind of going out of fashion. And now that using the fictional, why do I keep saying that?
Fictional,
thank you. I don't even know. I don't even know what's wrong with me. Fictional techniques of dialogue and scene and setting and character development and all of mm-hmm. those things that we've been talking about, that's almost kind of imperative in that even in that self-help kind of genre. I wanted to, and just so you know, Jane and I are Christian authors, and we serve the Christian kind of writing community, mostly on the West Coast, although we speak and teach across the nation. But we recognize good writing where good writing is, and so we're not always going to give you, just from the Christian publishing industry, we're not going to just name those books.
Thank you for that disclaimer, because I happen to read books that are written by non-Christians.
As I mentioned, I just completed my master's degree, and there wasn't anything on that that didn't make me want to go, But you can learn things from it. You can learn things and take things from it. And in my defense of my thesis, one of the things I said, I learned a lot of what I don't want to do too, and what I don't want to say,
mm-hmm.
because I believe that images and words are powerful. So you've got to be super careful with which ones you bring to the world.
Yes.
Right. So I wanted to just say that disclaimer, because some of our books might have language. Some of our books that we talk about, they're not just a resounding endorsement of the moral character of talking about something specific about a book,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily endorsing the book
right.
kind of thing. That I wanted to give that, you know, very
thank
clear.
You for that disclaimer.
You're welcome. I feel like we're now clear.
Okay, we got that out of the
we're
way.
Not going to, we're not going right, to have
let's,
any
let's move on.
Evil emails now. two books, that are kind of recent and kind of big buzzy books. One is called The Year of Less by Kate Flanders. And I'm going to read you a little bit of the blurb. It says, when she realized that nothing she was doing or buying was making her happy, only keeping her from meeting her goals, she decided to set herself a challenge. She would not shop for an entire year. I know. Should we just take a moment?
What?
Let me read that again, because I actually read that accurately. She would not shop for an entire year.
Wait. Can I just interject for one moment?
Are you crying? Is that a tear?
No, I did that. In 2017, I went on a one-year clothing fast. I did not buy any clothing for an entire year.
And you lived to tell the tale.
Well, I broke my arm at the end of the year, which was kind of a great way to end.
But did you buy a nice cast cover or something?
I did.
A celebration? Well, the rest of it says, the year of less documents Kate's life for 12 months, during which she bought only consumables, groceries, toiletries, and gas for her car. Blending Kate's compelling story with inspiring insight and practical guidance, the year of less will leave you questioning what you're holding on to in your own life. Now, I find that I haven't read this book, just as a disclaimer, I haven't actually read this book. I've read a lot of reviews of this book, and I've read a lot of information about this book. And it's the premise that really kind of grabs me.
And that's kind of a felt need right now, because you look at Marie Kondo, who wrote Spark Joy.
Yes.
And then you have...
Isn't she the one who tells you to have no more than 30 books in your house?
Yes.
Okay. So she's not Jesus.
She's
not Jesus. There's 30 on my nightstand, but whatever.
But that's kind of the almost like the Amish fiction of nonfiction.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what I like about this is in days past, that would have been, this is how you simplify your life in three easy steps. Week one.
We're going to clean your closet.
Step two, take all this stuff to Goodwill. Kind of thing. But it's narrative. Mm-hmm. She's telling more than her tips. She's talking about her life. Our good friend Kathy Lipp, who runs the Clutter Free Academy, if you listen to their podcast, do. Clutter Free Academy, it's Michelle Cushat and Kathy Lipp. They give wonderful life tips about how to live clutter free. And it's not just the stuff.
Right. It's internal clutter that keeps us from really fulfilling our true potential.
Absolutely. And if you'd like, the podcast is funny because Kathy and Michelle are two of the most wonderful, warm people that I know. Kathy is funnier than rubbish. And Michelle, I just absolutely adore her. They talk about their lives again. Mm-hmm. It's memoir in that they're learning something through events in their lives, but it can be so funny. You keep the tissue box handy. It is hysterical stuff. And I love the way that kind of self-deprecating, let me just say, I was the one who,
or don't open my junk drawer.
Exactly.
Or it's going to totally blow everything. Exactly. Yes, it looks good out here, but don't look in here.
I read some article somewhere that if you ever watched Friends, which of course, totally not Jesus, but if you ever watched an episode.
I might
back
have
in the
seen
day,
an episode.
Back in the day.
I will neither confirm nor deny
it. But there was an episode where, Monica is the neat freak and cleaning is her everything, her addiction. And Chandler finds out she's got a closet that's just absolutely full of junk. And she does everything to keep him from looking in it. And once he does, she can't even kind of breathe. And I think that being able to say your stuff, mm-hmm. own it. I tell all my kids, all four of my kids, if you keep something in the dark, that's where Satan operates. Once you bring it into the light,
it has no more power.
There's no more power. And the fact is, we are covered by the grace of Jesus. So we don't need to worry about, we make mistakes. We're going to do stupid things. We're all going to have our closets. But if we bring it into the light and say, that's me. That's what I do. One of the things I do is I eat the chocolate. If I eat a Twix candy bar, I eat the chocolate around the edges, then the caramel. I know, Jade, not looking at the video podcast, if you saw Jane's face right now, you'd know that we're probably not going to be friends. But then I eat the caramel, and then I eat the shortbread cookie last. My British husband, it's like almost a grounds for divorce. He just doesn't get that. I don't know why I've always done it that way, but that is the way I do it. I don't have a problem saying that. Well, actually, now I do, because I think I've lost a friend.
Okay,
let me just,
I know this is not part of writing. However, when I used to eat Hostess cupcakes, you know, the whole top of the frosting yes. comes in one little thing. So you eat the frosting first, then you cut it in half and you suck out the filling.
Okay, so I don't know where that look came from when I was talking about eating the Twix.
Well, because it's a Twix.
But it's a cupcake that you're just like sucking out the innards of. That's, you know, come on. But the thing is, we have our things, right? And they're right. funny. And if we can talk about, I could turn this totally into from laughing about the Twix thing to where that started. And that's not actually a pretty place where it started, where I started doing that. And I can eat a Twix normally in public. That's the compromise with my husband, and that's why we've been married for 23 years. So, but the reality is that there are life lessons that if we don't have some humor, some kind of, you know, this is the mistakes I made, this is who I am, these are my quirks. Then we have, you know, I mentioned that person that when I read sometimes when I read Christian kind of how-to or self-help kind of books, I can't even get past the first chapter because you get that kind of, I have never sinned. I have never right. done anything wrong. I know all the,
I've
you know.
I've come so far and let me just tell you how to do
it. Yeah, let me bestow my wisdom. And with all due respect, I hope there are people like that in the world, because my life has been messy. You know, I haven't always been the person I want to be. I'm not always the mom. I'm not always the friend. I'm not always everything. I'm moving from glory to glory, people. I'm hoping I'm going in a great trajectory. But the fact is, I did not start at the finish line. And so when you see books that when people are willing to let you in, like Kate Flanders is for The Year of Less, she's talking,
My sister.
I mean, she says, you know, I thought that stuff filled my emptiness. Mm-hmm. She's saying, you know, she racked up, she tells the exact amount of debt. She, you know, she talks about her sucking, you know, stuff out of the cupcakes like you did. I mean, she gives us those details. Mm-hmm. That makes us go, oh my gosh. Just what happened. I tell you my weird thing about Twix and you're like, let me tell you about my weird thing about the cupcakes, right? That's how it happens when you write memoir, that you're allowing people in, where
right.
you're
so
having
doesn't,
some sort of
it
connection.
It doesn't always have to be tragic.
No.
Well, and even in the things that we're writing about that are difficult, if we include a little bit of humor, it helps the person who's coming alongside and reading it go, oh yeah, okay. It helps to have a break.
Well, and
because funny, it is, some things are funny.
Absolutely. And it doesn't, I think that back in the day, I see a lot of that. I feel old now. I gotta stop saying
we
back
are
in the day.
Old.
You are
older than
you are. I'm still 23.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how I've been
okay.
married for 23 years and have a old child. But anyway. But the reality is, humor used to be either a way of diverting our attention from real emotions or from hard truths or something. It was almost like a coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that that's where humor is now. I think that you can use humor and talk about real issues, like you're talking about aging, but it's funnier than crud, but there's also real stuff.
Right.
You're really learning something and really
about some lessons.
Absolutely.
And how I'm dealing with getting older and how you should deal with it too.
You've got the five steps for how to do that.
Just kidding.
But when you look at the last of the kind of blurb on Kate Flanders' book, The Year of Less, it says, blending compelling story. So we got the story in there with inspiring insight and practical guidance. So there's the practical bit mm-hmm. there too. The Year of Less will leave you questioning what you're holding on to in your own life. I think that last line is pretty key to what's going on in a lot of memoir now. Instead of those self-help books that say, if you follow these things, happiness will come to you.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. You'll be fixed. You'll be over the grief. You'll be...
life will be rosy again.
You will not have any... you know, weight problems. You'll not have, I mean, everything will be fine. Your skin will be clear. Everything will be great. Instead of that, by showing us in through memoir, narrative, nonfiction, a glimpse into somebody's life and their journey, instead of us feeling like, oh, they're telling us how to do something I can't do. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't eat all organic, you know, and I can't wear non-polyester clothes or whatever. You feel like, well, what can I take away from this? What, mm-hmm. how is this going to apply to my life? Where do I see myself in her story and in her journey? And so that last line, it will leave you questioning. So not telling you what to do, but it will enter you into the process of asking mm-hmm. those questions and seeing what applies and what doesn't.
Yeah, what applies? What universal truth applies? I'm just looking at thinking, why didn't I write a book during my year of not buying any clothing for a year.
Did you learn something? Maybe how to write a book. The Year of No Clothing? I think you're, well, that makes it sound like you walked naked through.
As
a writer and vice president of a bank, that would probably not be your best professional. Well. No.
Okay.
There's another book, and this one is an interesting book. It's by Apricot Irving, which I love her name.
Mm-hmm.
Apricot. I don't know if you see now. I feel like they're. You say semi-fiction, and I say semi-fiction. And do you say apricot or apricot?
Apricot.
That's her name. I don't know. I don't want to get it wrong. Miss A. Irving.
Okay.
She wrote a book called The Gospel of Trees.
Mm.
And it is, her family were missionaries in Haiti. And it's all about, that's a very difficult culture. And it's all about the whole thing. The whole issues but instead of saying we were missionaries and we were a perfect family and we, you know, everything was fine and we did good in the world, it's exposing. It's really honest and really, really raw. But it's another way of telling a story of saying, I'm giving you a unique experience because not everybody lives in another culture.
Goes to Haiti.
Right? Mm-hmm. Not everybody lives in a missionary family either, mm-hmm. you know, not everybody has that kind of to live up to. So she's got all these complex things going on, another culture, a particular job, the weight of it being, you know, Christian missionaries, the fact that family dynamics, I don't care where you live, you're going to have, you know, parents with foibles and siblings with foibles and you're going to have foibles. And so that's a really layered one where there's so many issues that she's talking about.
Yeah, there's the food, there's the different environment, the weather. It will impact every area of your life.
Yeah. And I think,
that's not to say that this is not like an inciting incident where there's a devastating event, as we talked about in a previous podcast. This is a story of a period of time. And I'm sure that she offers hope.
Oh yeah. But one of the things that in the blurb about this book, it says, told against the backdrop of Haiti's long history of intervention. So that already is just fraught with an interesting premise mm-hmm. because Haiti has had a lot of other world, other cultures, other countries coming in to say, let me fix you. Let mm-hmm. me show you how to do it, which, of course, is a problem right there. So told against the backdrop of Haiti's long history of intervention, often unwelcome, it grapples with a complicated legacy of those who wish to improve the world. So I love that line
mm-hmm.
because it is a complicated legacy of those who wish to improve the world. So there were good motives there. So she's not saying, you know, the boogeyman came in and some bad thing happened and we're dealing with the aftermath. This is that complicated. There's a complicated setting, mm-hmm. complicated culture, complicated family, wanting to do good in the world, wanting to be a part of the solution and the complication of doing that in that environment. So that's not that, you know, our children died or abuse kind of thing. It's a completely different kind of memoir.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good, another kind of section of memoirs that we can have a riveting, riveting story without it being a catastrophic story mm-hmm. too. We don't have to have it be so dramatic for it to be dramatic, if mm-hmm. that makes any sense.
Now, this is a nonfiction.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're memoir.
Oh, okay. These are
so we're still talking about different kinds of memoir.
Okay, memoir. Okay, I can't, got it.
Is that what we're still talking about?
I think so.
I'm pretty sure.
I thought we were talking about Twix.
Probably. And I have now images of you sucking out things from cupcake innards.
I don't.
Okay.
You know, I don't eat Hostess cupcakes.
How are you so skinny? Anyway. One of the other, the series of books, because I've mentioned before, my husband is British and I've lived about 10 years in the UK and both of my biological children, because I've adopted two, were born in the UK, and so I'm a dual citizen. I love the UK, but it's a quirky little culture that is. And I still love, one of my favorite authors is James Herriot, who wrote.
Yes. I've read all of his books.
I'm serious. It's one of those things where if you haven't lived in the UK and in the countryside, which we did almost the entire time we've lived there, you could still absolutely adore him.
Mm-hmm.
But the nuances when you're like, oh my gosh, I live next door to that man mm-hmm. kind of thing. It's wonderful writing. And it's a story of a vet who's living mm-hmm. in Yorkshire. And he is just basically recounting the community, the culture that he is
in. And they are funny.
Hysterical. It's all funny. There isn't one. There's even when there are some hard things kind of creep in and things, there's never a moment where one chapter where I don't laugh.
Talk about a master storyteller. He is a master storyteller.
And you think that somebody who's basically telling the same kinds of stories in that going out to somebody's farm and something weird's happening. Going out to somebody else's farm, something weird's happening. Going out through the snow to somebody's farm and something weird, you know. You would think that that would get old. But not only does he sustain it for the book, and one of his books is All Creatures Great and Small, but there's several books, and they're all going out to the farm, and something funny happens. You know, and I love that he can give us a glimpse. Now, you could say it's entertaining. It's light entertainment. Some people will just laugh. But he gives us such a glimpse of the culture, the time, the climate, the complexity of relationships and small community. I mean, there's like so much there that's underneath the chortling and the guffawing that we do.
It's like we're peeking over his shoulder to get this glimpse into a culture that I'll never experience.
Yeah. And I think that that's, again, his choice, his method of memoir is through what really are almost standalone personal narrative pieces. Mm-hmm. You could take almost any chapter out, put it in a magazine, and it's hysterical. It's like little self, there's through threads, but for the most part, they're pretty self-contained stories. That's a completely different kind of thing than a lot of memoirs are doing now.
Today.
Where it's a little bit more linear, a little bit more cohesive. But the point that we're talking about is that telling a personal story, however you do it, whether it's through memoir, personal narrative, essays, whatever you're doing, chicken soup for the soul, it doesn't have to be about something difficult.
A tragedy.
You can give us powerful, connecting, relational stories that just make us laugh, that are part of healing, that are part of hope, that are part of, you know, I don't know if I want to not buy anything for 12 months, but what a wonderful glimpse into her life. I actually now want to read this book to see what made her make such an interesting kind of decision and what she got out of it. Mm-hmm. Those two things are, I mean, I actually want to read The Year of Less. So maybe I'll do that and we'll do a little book report on it.
There you go. Review. We'll do a book review.
All right. So just to underline that point, memoir does not have to be about something difficult or dramatic. It just has to be about something where you're learning something, you're growing in some way. It's about something that changes you as a person.
Right.
And it can be funnier than crud.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, you've been listening to The Art of Semi-Fiction. I am Robin Miller.
And I'm Jane Daly.
Where we explore every corner of the written word. Please, please, please subscribe, share, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening.